Blog Talk Radio.
If you really want to be free, and that's really what it's all about, right? Freedom, freedom and love. That's what we're here for, to experience our highest self through freedom and love. But the two are inseparably connected. So if you really want to be free, love is the key. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and yes, you're at the right place at the right time, no doubt. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, where week in and week out, we bring you news and information that's, well, gathered, culled, if you will, from around the world. Most often around these United States. Sometimes we do cross the borders, though. We go across the waters, the rivers, and to our neighboring countries to bring you news and information that you won't typically hear on mainstream media. And if you do, it just won't be presented the same way, because we bring it to you without commercial, without business, without political interest, straight, no chaser, right down Main Street. That's the way we roll here at Progressive News Weekly. It's news that's intended to empower you, encourage you, and enlighten you, and instill you to get involved and make a difference. No talking heads here. We're about ACTION, action. Let's make it happen. Because, you see, this is news for you, by you, of you, not unlike what our institution of our Constitution speaks of this country, although there are those that would say we don't really live by that axiom as much as we certainly should. It's about truth, justice, the pursuit of happiness. And as I said, it's questionable if we here in America are experiencing that at its highest level. I want to start out by saying that bumper tune, which was, in case you didn't catch it, for my old school listeners, Frankie Beverly and Mays, one of my favorite old school artists, with his rendition of Love is the Key. I want to first, before we get into the programming of this evening, give my condolences to all the families and friends and loved ones that were directly affected by that mass shooting in Florida yesterday. Another mass shooting here within our borders, literally a terrorist act, although it won't be labeled that, literally a terrorist act within our own borders. As you all, or most of you, if you haven't read it, you probably have your head somewhere in something very deep to not know about this at this point. 17 men, women, and children massively murdered. The second massive attack within our continental United States within 5 years. Of course, you all remember the scenario in Connecticut just about 5 years ago. So again, my deepest sympathy to all those who were directly affected. And I emphasize directly because all of us are affected. Let's be clear about this. This isn't a white or black thing, or a gay or straight thing, or rich or poor thing, or male or female thing, or Protestant or Jewish or Catholic. This is a human thing. I'm going to just quote as I do 4 or 5 times throughout the year. One of an individual's quotes who I admire and have admired and done research and study on, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I've got so many of his quotes, but this is one of my favorites. In a real sense, all life is interrelated. All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. Now, some people don't understand that. You know, that piece about I can never be what I ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be. So you see, we are our brother's keeper. And that's one of the reasons why I take what I do here in gratis so seriously. And I encourage you, not just for Daryl, but for you, your loved ones, and humanity, that we need to be spreading this word. As my mentor and friend and someone I loved and cared about and took me under his wing, and within the last couple of years of his life on this planet, took a personal interest in me, and I'll never forget it. Those mornings we would talk before he would go out and do a radio program or a presentation somewhere or travel across the globe, Mr. Dick Gregory used to say, never stop, Daryl. There's a universal God that's got his hands on you, and he's going to protect you and guide you and guard you. Just keep telling the truth. You owe it to humanity to fulfill your role. And I take it very, very seriously. He said, everybody's not going to listen or support you, but enough will. And those that do are on the journey along with you, as they should be. So I just, you know, I just ask that you do share Progressive News Weekly with someone. If you're listening, it obviously has value. And it costs you nothing to share it. So that's my soapbox for now. I'm sure I'll probably get back on it before the program is over. But I'd be remiss if I just didn't express some of those thoughts. We need to care about each other a lot more than we are. This month is deemed African American History Month, a month set aside for African American heritage and legacy, thanks to Carter G. Woodson. If you haven't read one of his most famous readings, The Miseducation of the Negro, you must have that. You must have that. White, black, yellow, green, purple, all you aliens are here perpetrating humans. That's a must-read. Laughter's good, folks. This is African American History Month. And so we like to do something a little extra, extra, extra special, because every month is African American History Month. Every month is Human Month here on Progressive News Weekly. And so this evening, with that said, I always like to, in African American History Month, have at some course along the month a special guest, someone that is beyond just a remarkable mind, someone that's a colleague and friend, so I can have some fun, because that's what it's about, right? Freedom, love, enjoyment, expressing our higher self. So our guest tonight is someone that's more than just as I said, a remarkable mind and a thinker, a critical thinker, and someone who is benevolent in his thoughts and actions. He's a friend. And we're going to enjoy this evening as he shares some some real nuggets, some golden nuggets of knowledge and wisdom with you. And as always, you are encouraged to participate. So, for those of you on the mail list, you know who I'm referring to, because the mail newsletter did go out today, and you know who it is. If you're not on the mail list, send me an email. Get on this wagon train, on this bandwagon, on this jet, and you too will know exactly who I am referring to. So, I am referring to Dr. Eddie Taylor, and Dr. Eddie Taylor's been on our program oh so many times. I'm pleased and proud and honored to say. And for those of you who do not know who Dr. Taylor is, well, here's a little something, just a little something about him. As I mentioned, he's a critical thinker. He's an author, human rights activist. He's an educator. He's armed with a PhD in clinical psychology. He has two master's degrees in addition. So with his practical experience and mindset, he weighs in on the myriad of societal ills affecting us, especially in the black community. This evening, we're going to focus on how and why African Americans can sometimes be their own worst enemy, and how we can correct that and make a difference. We're going to delve somewhat into his latest book and talk about upcoming projects as well that are going on. There are some areas in his most recent book that I am especially enthralled with as I've read the book, and it's a quick read, and we're going to talk about how you can get the book as well. And again, I encourage participation this evening. So without further ado, I bring Dr. Eddie Taylor. Dr. Taylor, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
I'm Derek Clark. Glad to be here again. Honored to be on your show.
Oh, yeah. It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. So, Dr. Taylor, as I was just expressing, you have a background that walks the talk. You know, you have certainly shown through your work, your body of work, your books, utilizing your doctorate in psychology and your master's degrees and your life experience to help to outlay solutions to many of the problems in society, especially the black community. Looking forward this evening to these nuggets that you're going to really lay upon us. As I mentioned, there are certain pieces of the book that I especially love when you start talking about how we can make things better in our society. The title of the book, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America. So before we go into the book and start talking about, you know, what you see as possible solutions to some of the challenges of Black America, tell me a little bit about what you generally would like African Americans, especially, but not just African Americans. As they say, we're in the wake of a mass murder. But you would like to see our society, as well as African Americans, to be thinking about in terms of African American history and our legacy and the role that we play in this society.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a very profound question, especially how you presented it. One of the things when we look at within this particular month, and then the legacy that we have as black people, I think it's very important for us to understand not only, you know, looking at where we are, but it's important that we understand where we've come from. We really can't understand or even appreciate where we are if we do not have a reference point in this country. Now, we can take a reference point back to Africa and understand, you know, the greatness, you know, of the tribes and the land that we've come from. But if we just look at our history being in this country and just seeing where we've come from in this country, I think that will bring about a huge sense of pride in the things that we've been able to accomplish. No other people, no other group of people in this world can have or can share with the things that we've been able to accomplish. And I think that's a very profound thing that we have as a people. And so I think that's very important. When we look at Black History Month, started as Negro History Week, when we look at all the things that we have to try to put in this particular month. You know, sometimes we're blessed to have 29 days, and sometimes we have 28 days in this month. But regardless, if we just look, if we try to put everything in this month to compress it, it will give us a huge sense of pride and honor if we really just look at every single moment, every single thing that we've done. And I think years ago we used to focus on Dr. King, and then they allowed us to look at Harriet Tubman. But when we're able to broaden our horizon and to look beyond the things that they have given us to look at, it causes us to feel invincible, regardless of the things that we've been able to accomplish, the people, our people, who've been able to stand up in the midst of adversities to be able to accomplish what was considered the impossible task for any people. But this, you know, this month, although we'd like to look at Black history throughout the year, all 12 months, but I think to have this month, and Carter G. Woodson, in his knowledge, his brilliant understanding of history, it was significant that we have something to either push us forward, to give us a kickstart, to reignite our battery, to just give us something to move us forward. And so every year we should have progressed. So when we come back to this month all over again, we should be able to see the things we've accomplished. And all of this is based upon the fact that we have had the liberty within ourselves, within our community, to do our own research, to do our own understanding, and to do our own evaluation of ourselves and our community. But sometimes what happens is that they give us the people, the events that they want us to know about. And I say they using that because I'm not exactly sure who they are. There's someone who is presenting this. The media could be part of it. There could be some politicians or those who control the politicians who could be part of it. But these individuals will give us certain people. So they gave us Dr. King until Dr. King took a stand. And so they didn't want us to to accept the part of Dr. King that was more militant. They didn't want us to accept the part of Dr. King that was the one who would not tolerate the inconsistencies of the political system. They want us to see the Dr. King that says, you know, nonviolence, just love everybody, and we need integration. But they didn't want us to see the Dr. King that talked about equality, that talked about we need to have demands, and if we're going to have any type of demands to attack people anywhere, we need to look at the attack that's happening here in this country. And so there are many things that we're able to look at now that we were not able to look at, that we, for some reason, refused to look at back then. But Black history is a very important piece of this country. Even when we look at, and you talked about the tragedy that took place in Florida, and then they also made a reference to the tragedy that took place in Las Vegas, and they connected the two. The one in Las Vegas is said to be the at the most homicides from a gun, from one gun, from one assault. And so when you look at that. What happened in Las Vegas, what happened in Florida, all these tragedies that are happening in this country, one of the things that we usually do in the Black community, you know, we usually just say, you know what, we know it wasn't one of us. You know, and that's one thing that we say, is we know it wasn't one of us. But there's something about it not being one of us that the country needs. There's something about love. There's something about forgiveness. There's something about perseverance. There's something about the ability to tolerate the unknown, to tolerate the unbearable. Even when there's a psychological issue, a spiritual issue, an emotional issue, Black America somehow has been able to hold on to life and just to value people, to value life. And that's something that we have to pass on. But I think as we go through this whole process of becoming more American, there is a danger in that we start to do the things that the soil has witnessed in this country, the no respect for life, it's just the morbid condition that the country is in. And so the country needs Black America to be Black America and to lead America out of the mess that America's in. So the country needs to know what it means to love, what it means to forgive. Most, if not all Black people, well, perhaps I should say most Black people, know individuals who are of another race. And at the same time, we love those people. We appreciate them. At the same time, we know exactly what their ancestors have done to our ancestors. We know exactly what happens in certain parts of this country right now this year that we cannot go into, and that they will somehow be almost ashamed or afraid to take us to some of the places where they go and hear some of the conversations. And although we know this, we still have love for our those who are of another race, because that's just who we are. And we have to make sure that we keep that, and not only that we keep that, but we develop a sense of ownership of who we are, and we can share that love to everyone who comes into this country, because that's a very important piece. And as you play your opening songs, you did play Marvin Gaye some time ago. And Marvin Gaye, one part that he says is that love is the answer. War is not the answer. That only love can conquer hate. And so that's what we need to do in this country. I went all around the circle around the mulberry bush looking at Black History Month, looking at Black history. But all of our history is all based on, it's all based on love. Even when we look at Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam during the 50s and 60s, how they talked about this as a hate group. It was never a hate group. It was a group that loved and that taught self-love, and it taught self-perseverance, and it taught self-defense. It didn't teach hate. It didn't teach go and destroy someone, blow up someone's place of worship. It taught love and self-defense. And so that's been the consistent theme for Black people, has been love. So even when we look throughout history, in Black history, there's a theme of love throughout it that we need to make sure that we uphold.
Wow. Wow. You touched upon so many. The one that resonates with me most right now is that ideal that in all these mass killings, Columbine, we didn't even mention that. I mean, these were not African Americans that are killing in mass. So there's a deep, obviously systemic sickness that's going on there. You're the psychologist, so I'm leaning on you on this analysis. Obviously, we do have that DNA of forgiveness within us, and something profound that America really needs, the mindset of African-Americans. You know, that takes me back to your book prior to this one, Restoring the Minds of Black America.
Yes.
You know, you were kind of ahead of the curve on that. I don't know if you ever thought about that. Because looking at what's happened since you wrote that book, I mean, it really ties into what you just said. That, is it really us? I mean,
right.
They really need to
yeah.
page from our mindset. You talked about reparations in that book.
Yes.
I think it's something that's profoundly important, that we as Americans, as human beings, need to really get out of our bias and egos and selfish attitude. There's certainly enough resources on the planet for everyone.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I always say there's strength in numbers. Whoever's listening to this program obviously has somewhat of a similar mindset. We open the airwaves up for anyone to comment, critique, criticize, compliment any of what we're talking about. We'd like to have that uncommon discourse on this level so that perhaps it can expand on a broader level. To really have some impact, it's helpful to have the numbers. And I know I'm plugging the program and what we're doing, but not
uh-huh.
for selfish, not for selfish reasons, for benevolent reasons. We need to share this kind of dialogue. What you just brought to the fore is just so critically important in terms of African Americans. You talk about the contribution, knowing our history. Historically, we're really, help me out, Doc. Historically,
uh-huh.
we're really a violent people. But we've been deemed coons and clowns and violent and ignorant and
uh-huh.
all the other negative things that any mind could ever think of.
And that's absolutely.
And that's by, you said, who is them? That's by certain sects of society, not S-E-C.
Uh-huh.
Society, I believe, for various reasons, we could do a whole separate section on why that's come about. Mainly, I would suspect, because of power, going back to the diaspora, and it's carried forth here. But it also could be part of the DNA, like you said, of a violent nature.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And we, as we are presented, to the media, which means to the world, as a violent people, sometimes that has, it's similar to an individual who would throw a rock and then point at someone else and say they did it. And so that's what happens. In essence, we have individuals who have this untamed or sometimes tamed anger inside of them, and the moment they lash out, it becomes like it becomes something like to identify, this is unusual, this person did this, this is a bad day. But when you look at it, this is something that has been brewing, this is something that has been going on inside of an individual. So you have to look more into, it's not just a bad day, there's something more to it, something more to it. And it's easier to say, that the black community, it's violent, that they're vicious, that they're homicidal. It's easy to say that in the point over there, rather than looking at what's really going on in the culture of America, within American society. Because what happens in the black community is definitely a tragedy. It's horrible, with the numbers that we see and all the things that are taking place. But when we look at the black community, what's happening in the black community is something that's always happened in the black community, but it didn't always happen by black people. The drive-by shootings didn't always happen by black people. The random acts of gun violence didn't always happen by black people to black people. The murdering, the homicide didn't always happen by black people. It was something that was in the white culture, or those who are non-black would target blacks. And so the hatred has just been passed on. And so what we need to do is to reverse that. If we can reverse, not passing on hatred from white to black, but passing on love from black to white, if we can do that, and then
wow.
rather than pointing the finger at those, we just have one person that had this mass, this mass shooting. But look at what the black people are doing. It's not about saying who's committing the most crimes. It's about
mm-hmm.
looking deep within. That's what it's about.
Mm. Mm. Okay. All right. I love that perspective. That comes back to us with all that we've been through with slavery and oppression and discrimination and racism at a level that I think many could not have withstand, speaking to the strength, the resilience of the African-American race.
Yes.
With all of that, we're still able to speak in terms of that which you're speaking of. And broadly, I mean, there are those radical groups, and let's be real about this, that could be considered maybe hate groups. But from the little research that I've done so far on this, and I've done a little, it pales in comparison to our, African American and even our Latino brothers and sisters. And I don't mean to draw a little thin line there. I'm saying African Americans. I'm strictly speaking about African Americans. We don't have, statistically speaking, those type of hate initiatives.
Right.
Any statistics bear that out as others. So you make again a valid point there, and using that example of what we need to be doing. And you've done the research, so you have reason to say I'm angry.
Right.
The last that I know, you've done the work. So I've got volumes of books, in terms of the abuse that we've endured. But I'm not out to walk into a department store and try to do something horrendous to every non-black face I see. It's just not in my DNA.
Right. Uh-huh.
So, just kind of segueing to the work, the research that you've done, now, contrary to being a danger and affront to others in society, as we're sometimes too often, I should say, billed, it appears as though we do more harm to ourselves on not just a physical but a mental level. I mean, look at outside of Chicago. And you know about that, coming from that area, as I'm from Midwestern Ohio and Cleveland, being a Chicagoan, firsthand what I'm speaking of. But it's not just in Chicago, it's in Cleveland, and it's in St. Louis and Compton and areas of L.A. and Houston. We are significantly animus to ourselves. And some of that is psychological due to, Dr. Joy DeGruy in her volume, and many others have written, just the psychological aspect of what we've dealt with could attribute, some of that, almost a self-hatred type of a mindset. And I'm sure you've done some research on that as well as a psychologist. But the question now is, what do we do about that? And that's where you and your work is so important, Dr. Taylor. Tell us.
So that question, what do we do, is huge. That's a huge question. And so I think there are many answers. There's many answers. I do not think that there's one thing we should do. I think there are many things that we need to do. The Day the Crabs Got Out, in that book, I talk about the organizations, and it's not just one organization. We have many organizations, and so it's about the organizations doing what they have been fundamentally and their foundationally what they were designed to do. As long as every organization within Black America do what they were designed to do, and then we will be on the way. We'll be on our way to this greater this greater level of existence, a greater phenomena. But it, that's what it's about, you know. And I was invited to the Urban League, and Urban League is an outstanding organization, especially what they they've done and what they're doing within Black America. But when we look at the Urban League, their purpose, their function, their existence was designed for Black people. It was designed for African-American people, the descendants of slaves in this country. That's what they were designed for. But there are many who are looking at different ways of expanding their horizon. So they're looking at diversity and diversifying their approach, diversifying their support. All that's great, fine, and good. However, their objective, just from my perspective, hasn't been met. I think they still have to, I think there's still needs within the Black community that the Urban League, you know, we need the Urban League 100%. It's very detrimental that we receive 100% of what the Urban League can offer rather than 50%, 70%, or whatever percentage is left over when they diversify. I think the Urban League is very important. And to say that, well, we need the white support, we need the non-Black support, well, that's how the Urban League and the NAACP have they've always existed that way. They've never been administratively, they've never been financially supported 100% by the Black community. They do receive a significant amount of support from the Black community, but everyone that loves life, love humanity, and love right, those who love what is right, they support these organizations. So it's not about saying we need to expand and help other people. I think they need to focus on their objective. So what do? We need to make sure that the organizations that exist continue to do what they exist to do. So that's just part of what we should do, or what we need to do.
You know, you touch upon a great point there. And the Urban League is a fine example, NAACP as well, because in circles across the dinner table at any given conference or a social event, picnics and the like, you will find conversations popping up about NAACP and questioning. And I believe with good reason, and I don't pull any punches. I have my opinion, and I'm willing to listen to any other opinion, but I stand on mine, which is not, I try not to be irrational, which is thought through logically before I open my mouth. I try to, but I do believe that that the Urban League and the NAACP needs a greater presence. It seems as though they have a lesser presence now than they did 30 years ago. And I don't think that there's any less of a need. I think there's even a greater need by some perspectives. Mm-hmm. Now, it depends on the perspective, of course, because you can say, well, the median income of African Americans is a little bit higher now than it was. Well, with inflation, I mean, you can play with numbers all day long. That's something I've learned to do through my studies as an economics, you know, major in marketing and finance. I can spin a number 10 different ways, and you don't know which way it came from. So
right.
You can do that. I mean, anyone can play with a number, but if you just step back and look at the whole picture holistically, relatively speaking, you look at everything, the mindset of our children, for example, the knowledge that they have of their past, and you compare it to 40 years ago, and I dare say, yes, that we are no better off. We, in many respects, are worse. Your thoughts? And I'm not saying that all of this falls upon the Urban League or the NAACP or SNCC or any of those other organizations. I'm just saying with such a plight, I would like to see more presence. I can remember seeing their presence there, there being, I'm not saying just marches, because now we have social media,
So there's a way to
right.
expand the exposure, but yet I don't see their presence.
Uh-huh.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. I think there's some people who wonder if they're still around. You know, is the NAACP still around? Is the Urban League still around? Because their presence is not the way it once was. And so there are issues that happen in our communities today where the NAACP would have been there. The Urban League would have been there. They would have been at the table having these discussions about the schools closing, having these discussions about the high unemployment rate in the black community, having these discussions about the incarceration, the disproportionate minority contact. They would be there, especially NAACP, when it comes to legal issues, when it comes to financial issues, and the disproportionate number of individuals who own property. The Urban League would have been there. But they've somehow decided to, either they decided to or just happened that way. They took a back seat. But when I look at the Urban League, the NAACP, I look at these as very pivotal organizations in the black community. And some would say, well, we're educated now. We're doing well off now. Well, that depends on where you are. If you're educated and you're doing well off, you'll probably sit around the educated and the well-off blacks. And you forget about those of us who still are trying to make it, still trying to figure it out, still stuck in the hole. And so, no, we haven't all made it. You know, so I communicated with the Jewish Federation because I wanted to just hear from them, you know, how did you all do it and what are you all doing and how did you make it work? Because the Jewish Federation, what they have done, they work together to bring the Jews out of their poverty, bring them out of rejection, bring them out of the situation when they were considered outcasts, to make them now significant people in the world, in the country. You know, they've given them some type of stability. They honor their life. They value that. And the Jewish Federation, although the Jewish community, you know, they're maintaining, they're stable, they're sustaining, but the Jewish Federation hasn't closed its doors. You know, they're still making sure that the Jewish community is doing all right. And that's what I would like to see the Urban League and the NAACP do. Now, there are some chapters that are highly effective, highly present, but within every major city, there may be more than one chapter. In every state, there's more than one chapter. And so I think if we can have the focus back on the black community, the Jewish community, they focus on the Jewish community, and they help others. But they've helped themselves first. You know, the Bible says in Galatians 6 and 10, to do good to all men, but especially those of the household of faith. And I think that every organization should do good to everyone, but especially those that you're designed to help. You know, take care of them first. And I think that's what we need to do. Also, look at the black fraternities and sororities. In these organizations, we now have non-blacks in these organizations. And so they want to diversify as well. We don't want to just help black children. We want to help all children. Well, that's good. However, understand the objective. Understand your purpose. Understand your founders and their role of establishing these organizations. It was to make sure that our people had what they need to survive. And as long as we have black kids looking at gangs instead of looking at support, instead of looking at community, then we have a problem. And so the fraternities and sororities, it's important because they're still around. After 100 years, they're still around. However, the objective hasn't changed. And the mindset of some may have changed some. But I think it's important that, you know, what do? We need the organization to get back, you know, to those who've strayed away to come back on board, those who are no longer supporting the NAACP, the Urban League, to get back on board, those who, you know, crossed those burning sands, you know, to get back on board, because we need all hands, and they say in the Navy, never in the Navy, my brother served, but they say in the Navy we need all hands on deck, and so that's what we need. We need everyone to do what they can do.
Yeah, you make a good point there, and as you bring that up, it comes to mind, you know, some of the conversations we've had over the last year about some initiatives, and you know, I'm looking forward to that in terms of engaging with some of these organizations. And you know, it's a scenario where we'll want to germinate, as you might say, the effort. You have some, as you said, organizations, but they're splintered. And if you have a splintered base, it's not formidable as if it were a solid base. And so that's another difference that I see now versus 40, 50 years ago. The base was consistent across America. And you didn't have an effort here and an effort over there that was not as energized.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know if that's because of not having a strong leader. I'm not sure what that is, but I do know that that energization, if I can say that, is needed. And if that's something that is going to come from an effort like yours and what you're talking about doing in traveling and talking about the book and the books that you've done and engaging some of these organizations, like you've talked about in your travels, perhaps coming out east, I love that. I embrace that. I'm honored to participate in that. I've been talking with some of the leaders of the organizations out east and trying to galvanize a strong base of support for what you're talking about doing, and I'm looking forward to that. So, listeners, Dr. Taylor is going to be coming back and talking about this aspect of his model for solutions, in addition to some of the other models in the book, because it's not just about fraternities and sororities, civic organizations. You talk about churches in the book as well, so there's some other things as well. But to start somewhere is to start, and that makes a difference. So I agree with you. Those are organizations that have a tradition. The framework is already in place. It may need to be galvanized some and fortified some, but certainly the structure is there. I agree with you, and that's a great place to start. And I think that's what I'm hearing you say, and that's what I think I'm reading in your book. Am I right?
Yes.
I mean, you talk about the 9 organizations, for example, in your book. You say, and I've heard the term Divine Nine. In fact, we have a strong, they call it, organization of fraternities and sororities here, also known as the Divine Nine. And now we're just talking black, what's known as BGLOs in the fraternal world. That's Black Greek Letter Organizations, as you refer to it in your book. And you say it consists of 5 fraternities and 4 sororities, Alpha Phi Alpha, Kappa Alpha Phi, Omega Psi Phi, Phi Beta Sigma, Iota Phi Theta are the fraternities, and the sororities are Alpha Kappa Alpha, Delta Sigma Theta, Zeta Phi Beta, and Sigma Gamma Rho. And those are what is known as the Divine Nine. And these organizations, they aren't going back some 30 or 50 or 60 years. I mean, are we talking like 1905? We're talking, these organizations have been around for a very long time.
Yeah.
A very, very long time. And they were founded for the stability and the upliftment of the black community. So I admire you in your approach to help to put some focus back, and I'm hoping that they'll embrace what you're looking to highlight. I'm hoping it doesn't become a crab in a barrel. That's not the
response that I'm getting. The response I'm getting is, oh, Daryl, I'm embracing what you're telling me about Dr. Taylor. So it's a matter of time now to see, you know, where that rubber meets the road. I mean, Omega Psi Phi, 1911, and they weren't even the first. It was, I believe, Alpha Phi Alpha that was the first.
1906.
Yeah, 1906. So, I mean, come on, this is 2018.
Right.
So I understand where you're coming from, and I think that the masses, I'm comfortable with this. I've done my numbers. I'm a numbers guy. The masses, based on my little small statistical sample of 100 or so people, which is random, and which is not geographically bound, because as I travel, I add that to my statistical base. The masses do not know what you have put into your book about how far back they go. As you said, these are organizations that are college, that are basically well-educated individuals. Now, the
absolutely
go to college in the black community are very slim to none. Folks, if you got a friend, nephew, child, grandchild, uncle, whomever that went to college, you are a rare gem. Dr. Taylor, you are an intellect. I wouldn't lie to our listeners. Is that not a fact? We're not talking 15% of the black community. We're not even talking 10. We're into small, small single digits that go on to higher education.
Right.
And you spoke of what that being one of the problems. And when I say higher education, I'm talking college or beyond. A small fraction. And so these are individuals that have the wherewithal to truly make a difference. And if they're such a small, small fraction of our society that holds so much weight that can move and change and shake, you know that term, movers and shakers.
Right.
then the masses need to know that they can look to them, which puts a little bit more pressure on them maybe, and also on the real positive side, gives them what, and I know there's some wonderful, wonderful fraternal and sorority organizations out here that are doing great work right here in the area where I live. Great work. And they can't get enough enthusiasm and momentum from the masses, because the masses, I believe, just don't know. They see what the television says, stepping and partying.
That's right.
That's the image that's been portrayed. So if you and I'm with you and I and others can help to shear off that negative and help them to help their efforts, what they were traditionally founded to be, I think it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can just bring about the education of the masses, because the masses, I don't think, really realize. I really don't. So kudos, and I'm not just trying to patronize you. I don't play that game. My hat off to what you're talking about here in trying to help. Because if I said to galvanize, that wouldn't be fair to them, because they're doing good work. They're doing excellent work in many, many cases. And they should be willing to take any assistance that they can get. And this will be a true test to them, I believe. I believe it's going to be a test to them whether they embrace or reject the efforts. I think it will be.
Right, absolutely.
Because it's almost like the Jews and the Gentiles. Laughter's good, I always say. You know, I mean, you represent the Gentiles. You're saying, look, I don't know if you're of a Greek background. I'm of a Greek background, but of a professional Greek organization. But I'm just saying that
you're trying to bring the masses into play with this for their efforts.
Right.
Am I correct?
Yeah, yes, you are. Yeah, and that's and it's in, you know, as we look at the Jews and the Gentiles, I usually refer to, because the Gentiles are usually looking at those who are the outcast, those who are not really accepted, those who are, you know, have some weird way of living. So I you know, when I look at the black community, in all actuality, would be the Jewish community, but it's how the two groups point at each other and, you know, try to exclude the other group. And then those who would stand up to say that, no, we're just as significant, if not more, then you're right. That person becomes targeted. And so all of our leaders who've been assassinated, they were the ones who stood up to say that we're just as significant, if not more.
That is true. That is very true. You're absolutely correct. And I, just as you were talking, it just jogged a thought in my head in terms of the perspective of that, you know, the Jews and Gentiles and one group being looked down upon. It takes me back to, full circle, your book, The Day the Crabs Got Out.
Yes.
I mean, we're all in this together. And let me ask you now. In your book, though, you say that there are those who are outside the barrel. Are those, if they're African Americans, if we're talking about the if the model is talking about African Americans, and there are some in the barrel and some out, are the ones out the barrel always the ones that are doing better, or are there some that are, you know, not? And I'm talking strictly financially better. Or are there some that are not financially better that are outside the barrel? But, I mean, we're talking literally income that just happen to have an understanding to not have that mindset. Or is it strictly based on finance?
If we base it, that's difficult.
Or income.
That's so difficult, finances. And so, but I like how you phrased it, and I'll respond to it in an interesting way, because there are so many that's in the barrel who are millionaires because they thrive off of those in the barrel.
Wow.
And so they keep them in the barrel, and they thrive off of those in the barrel, and so that's how they make their finances, by being in the barrel, having that barrel mentality. You know, so you can have, you know, you can have variety. You know, not only drug dealers. You can have individuals who are into entertainment, and so entertainers, different type of entertainers. You can have entertainers on both sides. You can have entertainers that actually thrive off of keeping individuals in the barrel, and so they must stay in the barrel to keep those in the barrel. And so that's financially. Outside of the barrel, you do have those that are doing very well financially, as you know, also. But they're actually, their income, their finances are made either by helping or by in some type of profession, you know, either a trained profession, a learned profession, a skilled profession. So they've learned, you know, how to maintain their wealth without taking advantage of people, more so of helping people. And any profession where you are making significant income, there are people involved. Either you're hurting them or you're helping them.
There's no fences in this situation. Is
no,
that what you're saying?
No,
there's no fence. You're one side or the other.
Well, you know, there's people that can probably crawl under the fence, but you can straddle the fence because you could have some individuals who, you know, they may actually not, you know what, because they can make their income. If you're looking at income only, finances only, you can make your finances. Like someone may win the lottery. And so financially, they could be considered outside of the barrel. But if their mindset hasn't changed, they can win $30 million. And it can be gone in no time because they have not changed their mentality. You know, and so they end up staying in the barrel with the millions of dollars and then eventually losing all the money and then ending up right back where they started because they didn't change their mentality.
And that takes me to another point. So whether you, because you did answer the question that, no, it's not about income, meaning you're out the barrel automatically, and if you're high income, and if you're low income, you're automatically in the barrel. You can not be a millionaire and be outside the barrel, and you can be a millionaire and be inside the barrel. So that answers that question. But what you did is you opened up another sort of a caveat there with what you just said. Is it that the barrel is those who are feeding on each other? Is that the content of the barrel, basically?
Absolutely, and that's the whole idea. That's the metaphor of it, you know, and so that's the whole synopsis. That covers everything. And so the idea of the crabs in the barrel is they have to stay in the barrel, and if you try to make it out, they'll pull you down one way or the other because that's the mindset.
And who pulls you down may not necessarily be rich. They may be poor.
You're absolutely correct.
So it's not a financial. It's not directly tied to the financial being in the barrel. Okay.
Right.
I got it. And so if you're outside the barrel, do you understand the dynamics of the barrel? And you are trying to counter that? Or are you outside the barrel and possibly ignoring it, which maybe mentally makes you sort of in the barrel? So can you be outside the barrel and not be trying to help those in the barrel? Is that possible?
Absolutely.
Or does that put you
mentally
in the barrel?
Well, no, because there are some individuals who make it out of the barrel and they run for the hills. They run for the hills. And so that's the issue that we have, you know, with individuals who have benefited from organizations. And then once they receive the maximum benefit, they leave. And they're nowhere to be found, you know. So when we need someone to come and show the, you know, come and show men how to be men, come and show women how to be women. Well, they know how to be a man. They know how to be, you know, a woman. However, they've left the community. They don't come back to visit. They don't do anything. They made it out the barrel. You make it out on your own. So they're doing well. You know, they're educationally, financially, they have everything going for them, and they're out of the barrel. They don't have the barrel mentality. They're doing very well, and so that's the great divide. The great divide is basically to keep us divided. Those who are doing very well, you all stay over there, and let's keep those in the barrel. And so what we need is for those who made it out to just reach your hand back in there and grab somebody and pull them out. But, you know, because we have highly successful politicians, highly successful businessmen, highly successful educators, highly successful engineers. We have in every field, we have highly successful people. But what we need is for those who are successful to reach back in the barrel and grab somebody. But we've all ran off. Most of us have ran off.
So is there a metaphor for them? is that another book? A metaphor for those who have got out the barrel? I'll let you think. I'll let you come up with that one. Because, you've got those that are doing harm by not helping, and you've got those that are doing harm by just simply directly doing harm. And those that are doing harm directly are in the barrel. But we don't want to lose sight on those who are outside the barrel, who are doing harm by not helping.
Right, and I didn't consider those outside of the barrel I didn't consider those outside who are doing well as doing harm. I would see them as like medicine, castor oil, cod liver oil. You know, that stuff is good for you. However, if you don't take it and you leave it on the counter, it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to do anything for you. And so that's how I see them. I don't see them as being like a poison or harmful. I see them as just being there dormant. Yeah, and so I don't have any type of harm that they put on those in the barrel. But I think that they're not being useful as valuable as they can be.
Mm. So there's two approaches, though. If we want to engage that use, because that's certainly going to help, but I guess more directly is to address the barrel. That's where the crux of the issue is.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, where do use the example of the fraternities, because we could use churches, we could use civic organizations, NAACP, the Masons and like.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just stay with the fraternity as an example, just as an example for all my fraternities out there.
Yes.
Are they outside the barrel, or are they considered in, they're outside the barrel?
Yeah, and I'm using the organization, generally speaking, not looking at every individual member, but like headquarters and that, you know, those who are actively involved, you know, generally speaking, the fraternity are outside of the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you may have some who struggle and they're stuck in the barrel. But when you look at the organization as a whole, it's outside of the barrel. And what, you know, the revival part of that, you know, to get the crabs out is, so what I've seen is the fraternities do an outstanding job. They work with everyone. They work with children. They work with the youth, the adolescents, who are all outside of the barrel. And so they help those who are out of the barrel. They help those who are doing okay outside of the barrel. They make sure that they provide scholarships and resources for those who are outside of the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
What we need is continue to do what you're doing for those outside of the barrel, but go in the barrel. Get the children that's coming out of juvenile detention. Get the children who can't read. Get the children who have to take care of their families by sticking up drug stores, by selling drugs on the corner, by thinking that's the only way to make it in this world. They're stuck in the barrel. And so continue to help those, you know, the A students, those who are at the science and math academy. Continue to help those, but also help those who have to go to alternative schools. Help those who have dropped out of school since they're 16, since they've reached the age and they no longer have to attend school. Help those who are in and out of group homes and in and out of foster care. And so those are also individuals that we need to help as well because they're stuck in the barrel.
So we want to utilize the energies and resources of those outside the barrel to help those in the barrel. So we're not really looking to try to change the mindset of those who are in the barrel who have the wherewithal. We're really looking to those outside the barrel, primarily, who have the wherewithal. Because the ones inside the barrel, they're just like scavengers. They're going to be who they're going to be, taking advantage of those in the barrel. That's how they survive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the focus. The focus is those outside the barrel who can help those in the barrel.
Absolutely, yes.
Hmm. The day the crabs got out, revival of Black America. This has been so enlightening. I know that our time is limited. So we are going to do a series. We are going to engage, and I missed a couple that had wanted to speak, and I see that they've dropped. I apologize for that. But we're going to revisit this, and I'm going to engage and try to see that when you're on again, we'll try to have a panel of at least maybe two or three representatives from some of the fraternities and sororities and expand the dialogue and open it up to the masses in general, to be able to ask questions of not just you, Dr. Taylor, but of those who are leaders in some of these organizations as we interact with your model and what their missions are and what their perceptions of your model is, and see if we can stir up some energy on a broad base, and
and see if we can make some headway to get these crabs, at least a significant number of these crabs out of the barrel.
Absolutely.
So is that something that we can do? And I know I'm putting you on a public spot we had talked about it brief generally, but that's something we can do, engage in?
Yeah, that sounds like something that we need to do.
Okay. So then let's plan on that. Let's follow up with this offline and set up our next series. And with that, we'll plan on a panel, I said, at least two or three. And we'll start with the fraternities and sororities and see if we can get two or three a minimum representatives to carry this dialogue with you. And then at some point, perhaps we can have a broader conversation that we can stem off of from that as you make your way out east in your travels and maybe
yes.
have some type of a really broad forum to expand on it.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great.
Fantastic. For those of you who came on late or if you are in the archives, you have been getting these golden nuggets from Dr. Eddie Taylor, author, humanitarian, educator, and he's armed with a PhD in psychology and two masters. And he's looking to make a difference. He's not just using it, his arsenal, to just survive and be comfortable with his family. He's truly out to make a difference. And he has joined us here on Progressive News Weekly, has been a partner of Progressive News for many, many years. And now we're truly going to take this initiative of his and support it and expand on it as much as we can. If you have any thoughts and ideas, you can drop me an email to Daryl, Darryl, _CLA18 at MSN.com if you'd like to participate or you know of leaders of sorority or fraternity. For our next series, it will be on the air, so it does not have to be limited to the East Coast or any geographic area. Rather, you're West Coast, and we know we have listeners out West that were on this evening from the Midwest, from the South, and, of course, from the East. So let's make this thing happen here and support Dr. Taylor in his efforts and what he's doing. This is truly a wonderful thing. Again, Dr. Eddie Taylor, PhD in clinical psychology, two master's degrees, practical experience, and the mindset to make a difference. Dr. Taylor, how would someone reach you if they wanted to participate or have thoughts or ideas? Is there a website or an email or anything that you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure. They can actually reach me on my website. It's eddietaylorphd.com, and it's eddietaylorphd.com. And there's a link on there to contact or to leave a comment or to ask a question. Again, it's eddietaylorphd.com. And so that's the best way to reach me.
Great. eddietaylorphd.com. All right, folks, you've heard it. Now, as we close, I just want to mention that you shared with me that you have another project coming up, and I'm getting ready to get excited about it. You have a book that's getting ready to come into works. You know I had to mention it. So is it something getting ready to happen or what?
Yeah, it should be out by the end of this month. It'll be out in February.
Oh, whoa. This is great. Okay, so if we're looking at maybe 2 weeks, the next 2 weeks are booked. So if we're looking 3-4 weeks at the very most, hopefully your schedule permits, because I know I could do 4 weeks definitely and possibly even three, then you'll be able to talk to the new book?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. Did we dare ask you what the title is, or is that pushing it?
Yeah, sure. Well, the title is How to Move Black America Forward.
Wow. Right in line with everything that you're about. How to Move Black America Forward. Black America Forward. Okay, I'm going to be on the lookout for that one. All right. Well, Dr. Taylor, again, thank you so much. And, you know, we'll be talking in the next couple of days and trying to set up some specifics around how we're going to move forward with this initiative. And I truly appreciate, you know, what you do and allowing us to be a part of it. And I mean that with all sincerity. So let's look forward to talking in the next days ahead. To our listeners, we thank you. I know there were a couple listeners that were there, and I know your time sometimes gets short and you can only be on for a limited amount of time. But I assure you, if you're back into the archives, because I know many of you have to drop and you come back and listen to the whole program in the archives, if you want to drop me an email, if you had a question for Dr. Taylor, I'll be sure to get it to him. Otherwise, I'll be sure that if you drop me an email, you'll know you'll be one of the first to know the exact date that Dr. Taylor will be returning in the next few weeks ahead. And that's Daryl, Daryl, _CLA18.com. Daryl, _CLA18@msn.com. Of course, Dr. Taylor mentioned if you wanted to reach him, that you can reach Dr. Taylor at EddieTaylorPhD.com. That's EddieTaylorPhD.com. If you have some information or questions that you directly would like to ask him about. And so until next week, again, we thank you for taking the time out to tune into another edition of Progressive News Weekly, and tell someone whom you love that you love them. This was Valentine's week, so especially let them know, because you don't know what tomorrow brings. And truly, I send my love to you and your loved ones, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's free. And so I'm sending it out to all of you. And Dr. Taylor, again, love you and your family. Peace and blessings to you. And we're looking forward to talking with you again. So until next time, love will bring us back together. And say a prayer for those in Florida, folks, because prayer does work. Peace and blessings. Until next week.